Word of mouth.
Word of mouth.
Word of mouth.
Word of mouth.
Word of
mouth.
This is Word of Mouth from NHPR. I'm Virginia Prescott. Late last month, Facebook made waves, not for changing its privacy policies or redesigning its news feed, but for news that it had tapped Facebook users as unwitting participants in a massive social science experiment. Back in 2012, Facebook manipulated the feeds of nearly 700,000 users, eliminating either positive or negative posts. And the results from the study indicate that the content of the social network can influence a user's mood. The news quickly went viral, not in a positive way, and has prompted investigations from privacy regulators in the UK and in Canada. Alongside the slew of condemnations is a contrarian view, one that defends Facebook's study and other examples of lesser-known corporate research. Clifford Lampe is Associate Professor of Information at the University of Michigan at Ann Arbor. His op-ed for the Chronicle of Higher Education is called Facebook is Good for Science. And Clifford, we welcome you to Word of Mouth.
Thanks so much for having me.
So in your op-ed, you admit straight away that you are a Facebook partisan. Now, what does that mean?
That means that I think that, I've done a lot of work with Facebook. So I have active research projects with people in the Facebook data science team, which is their research lab. Two of my PhD students are currently doing internships at Facebook. I've had postdocs and previous students go to work for them. So I feel like the research that they do is in line with the things I've been doing in academia.
And the data science team is the team that conducted the research in 2012?
It is, yes, them and they and some researchers from Cornell University.
So critics argue that by agreeing to the terms of service, participants are not really giving consent to being part of a psychological experiment. Now, why do you think Facebook deserves praise for doing the study?
I think they deserve praise partially because they published the study. So the argument that I'm trying to make is that this type of thing happens all the time as people try to improve their services that they offer people. Facebook and any other company like them is constantly tweaking their algorithm. So there's not one canonical version of the news feed that they manipulated to make different. Every news feed is adapted to the person by what Facebook thinks the person finds interesting. So in this case, what they did is they conducted a relatively normal study for how they would do things, and then they published it in a really highly respected journal, which to some extent is a great thing because that makes the power of the newsfeed algorithm available to people and educate us about how much we should care about how much these algorithms matter in our normal lives.
So they would do it anyway.
I don't particularly like that argument, and I know how ridiculous it sounds to people that they would do it anyway, but they would. Companies would do this anyway. And the danger that we have by, I think, especially in academia, taking a righteous indignation position on this is that it would chase this research into the dark, whereas having it in published peer-reviewed science serves multiple benefits.
Maybe I should backtrack and ask you, what were the results of this study? Did a more positive or negative news feed actually affect the mood, so to speak, of Facebook users?
That's been a source of pretty great debate, too. Even the most radical interpretation of the article would be that hardly at all, right? So that, yes, they found a statistical significance that if, for instance, you saw more messages that used negative or positive emotion words, you might post more negative or positive emotion words in the future. But one out of 1,000 of the words that were posted were different. So it's a really, really small practical effect that they found. And the only reason that it was statistically significant is because they ran it over 700,000 people, as you mentioned earlier. The other thing that has been debated about that is really we're not measuring mood. We're measuring the types of words that we use when we post things on Facebook. So this could, for instance, some researchers have pointed out this could be more imitation than it is something that actually affected our mood.
Why, Clifford, can social scientists not do this kind of work without assistance from the corporations that they're looking at? So it's not considered to be an inside job.
Scientists do this work all the time. I think that's part of the reason why the psychologists involved with this didn't find it to be a particularly ethically concerning study, is because priming studies like this are used all the time in science. And in fact, in those priming studies, often informed consent is waived by institutional review boards or IRBs because it would basically give away the research and make it invalid. So I think in this case, there are two reasons why the Facebook stuff makes it so much more interesting than what we typically do in labs. One is the what we call ecological validity, which means that it's real, right? People are really posting these things in Facebook, and that's hard to replicate in a lab environment. People, when they're aware of being observed, they say things as if they're observed, which changes the nature of the science. The other thing that really makes this difference is the diversity of people that you get on Facebook as opposed to what researchers usually have access to. We've done a million studies on college freshmen.
Right, right.
And college freshmen do not represent the typical population. The Facebook sample that we have here is much more diverse, much broader, and looks much more like the American population than any group of psychology undergraduates will.
How about the value of the study itself? I mean, why should the public care about whether Facebook feeds influence our emotions?
Especially around 2012, when these data were collected, there were a lot of stories going around about how Facebook makes you sad, right? So we've seen a lot of stories like this over the past several years. And the dominant idea was, if I see you posting happy things, like you share all these stories.
Right, I thought it was more comparative. You know, it was sort of like when comparing oneself to another person, they would feel sad, not their news feeds.
Well, that was their hypothesis going in for these researchers as well, right? So if I saw more positive emotion from you, I myself would feel more negative. And that's not what they found. They found that if you shared more positive emotion, I post more positive things too. So, you know, that is exactly what we want out of social science, which is to have a narrative that we believe, which is that, you know, I have this negative comparison with you and find that it's not true by conducting decent science here.
You remember that Facebook study that people were all exercised about? Well, Clifford Lampe wrote an op-ed for the Chronicle of Higher Education saying that Facebook is good for science. He's making his contrary case with us today on Word of Mouth. Not all of your colleagues might agree with you. Andy Kramer, who is a scientist who worked on the study, has said quite plainly, in hindsight, the research benefits of the paper may not have justified all of this anxiety. What's your response to that?
I think he's probably right on a couple of levels. One is, it's important to remember, they did not find much of a practical effect. So, you know, given the scale of what they did and the fact that there were things they could have done, I think, to alleviate people's concerns that they didn't do, you know, it is something to question whether the result is important enough for the concern that people have about this kind of research. And I think that's one of the really interesting things about this particular reaction is, you know, we're entering a new world where social scientists can kind of enter these types of situations, and it creates a whole new context for informed consent and human subjects reviews that we haven't had over the past 60 years that such protocols have developed.
I'd like to get to that point about alleviating people's sense that they were played because, you know, so many of us use Facebook. We get this new privacy policy. We just agree with it. Nobody ever actually reads it. But now they feel a little bit duped. Is that what the anxiety is all about, that they were somehow used?
I think there's a lot of things going into the anxiety that people feel, one of which I think this is wrapped up into general anxiety people have about Facebook, about the power of one company that one company has over all of the communication that you have with your friends and your networks. A second source, I think, is media narratives. This study was out for about a month before a couple of blogs picked it up. And by framing it, for instance, even in your introduction, you called it a manipulation of the news feed. I think even that framing kind of paints a particular way of shaping people's views of what the study was about. And then I think the third thing is that people really are legitimately concerned about, you know, the opacity of this newsfeed algorithm. And I think, surprisingly to people like me, so many people were surprised that the newsfeed isn't just this straight-up listing of what your friends have said.
If Facebook made the choice to feed particular kinds of news to a user group, what would you call it other than manipulation?
I would call it feeding their algorithm, basically. So they do this all the time. Part of the reason why I don't like the term manipulation in this case is because it speaks to manipulating the users. And I think what Facebook is trying to do is to manipulate the content or to share the content in such a way that it's useful for people. You know, it is, of course, a manipulation of a type, but how the general public understands the word manipulation versus how I think Facebook intends to make the newsfeed work, there's a slight framing difference there that's important.
What do you think Facebook could do differently to prevent this sort of controversy moving forward in the future?
Well, I think that my fear is what they'll do is just stop publishing research. You know, that would be the easiest thing for them to do. What I hope they do is really work on some mechanisms to protect users in different ways. And I know they've had some conversations about these as well, one of which is a more invested internal review process. They've also talked about having an external board of trusted academics that they've worked with in the past or external lawyers come in and do ethical reviews of work that's taken place or has taken place recently. They've talked about hiring external IRBs, similar to what universities employ, to look over work. There's lots of things they could do. I just hope that there's enough energy and enthusiasm left for them in doing this kind of research that they'll move that forward.
A contrary view of the Facebook newsfeed study from Clifford Lampe, Associate Professor of Information at the University of Michigan at Ann Arbor. Clifford Lampe, thank you for your time.
Thank you so much.
His op-ed for the Chronicle of Higher Education is titled, Facebook is Good for Science. We'd like to know what you think. Are you still creeped out by the Facebook study? Would you be a willing participant of corporate research if they asked your consent beforehand? You can share your opinions on our Facebook page, facebook.com/wordofmouthradio.